WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now, Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, back again for another week, breaking down Syracuse men's basketball. It's been a roller coaster few days for Adrian Autry's group, and plus Syracuse football, the transfer portal. It's opening soon, right after New Year's Day. The transfer portal will open. Already have some pieces falling into place as well. So when you thought football season was over, it's right back on your plate, to put it that way. But before we get into all that, AJ Myers alongside just Griffin Bloomstein this weekend. Griffin, the semester is over at Syracuse. Holiday break is officially in swing, but there's still plenty of sports professionally and collegiately. Obviously holidays are a great time of year, but athletics wise, it's a really good time of year.
We're kicking up. It's busy. You know, the lacrosse schedule dropped.
Yes.
The football news is going on. Basketball's heating up, maybe cooling off. One of those teams, we'll talk about it. But it should be an interesting couple weeks. Some big news. We should definitely get some big news in the next 2-3 weeks about this football squad. And then one interesting note: basketball, football signing day happened. Basketball signing day is in a couple of months. But like, Syracuse doesn't have any recruits for the 2026 class, which is maybe a little interesting. So I'm excited. There's a whole lot going on, you know, transfer portal, offseason recruiting. I love talking about that stuff. So I'm excited. Should be fun basketball season. Hopefully, if they can get their mojo back. But you know, we got a lot of coverage to talk about.
Yeah, certainly. It's a busy time, and that's what we love. And for Syracuse men's basketball, you mentioned no recruits, which I think is interesting. It's almost like maybe you don't need a marquee one if certain players come back. But, you know, honing in on this current season, I mean, you beat Tennessee by 2 points at the start of the month. All looks great. The sun is shining on the hill. Everything looks great. Then you have a really poor performance against St. Joe's. And right from that Hofstra game, right from the get-go, you just kind of sensed, at least I did, that it wasn't going to go well. Hofstra's a good team. They're probably going to be in March, but they're certainly going to be around in March. You could definitely see them as a, you know, 14, 13, 12 kind of type seed. And they dominated the Orange. I mean, Syracuse wasn't really, like, they were in the game, but they never were really in the game. Hofstra just had complete control. And against Mercyhurst, which all I hear about before the game is, oh, Mercyhurst is this bad. They have no one who's tall. They're going to, you know, this should be a, you know, the spread was 24.5 points in favor of Syracuse. And it ends up being a 76-62 victory for Syracuse, which on the face of it, sure, you're like, oh, good win. They handled business. Griffin, they did not handle business. This game was way too close all the way through. And really, the only reason Syracuse won this game is because they're simply more athletic. They simply just had better players, but they didn't play well at all. You know, team performance-wise, I'd argue Mercyhurst played better than Syracuse. I mean, the Orange were just a disaster, and the turnovers are the reason why the Lakers stayed in the game. But even then, the Syracuse still shot really, really poorly throughout the whole contest, and it was just an ugly and just disappointing game to watch.
These are games that teams that make the NCAA tournament, teams that are good, like Louisville and NC State, I don't know why those two came to mind, but they did, win by 40 or 50 points. Like, that is not a joke. These are, Hofstra's a good team. I could see them winning the CAA championship, but Mercyhurst is a bottom 5 to 10 team in the country. Like, they are the only team that is as bad as free throws as Syracuse. That says something. And like, that is, it's absurd that what this end is a 14-point game. And it was lucky it didn't dip down to single digits, because when Syracuse stopped trying towards the end of that second half, Mercyhurst was still putting up a fight. Like, they were still attacking. There was no level 5 energy from Syracuse in the past two games. Like, there's no defensive energy. They play half, you know what I want to say, half bleep basketball, and it's coming back to bite them. Like, they're not playing with the intensity that they played against Tennessee, that they played against Houston. And then on offense, like there was times when Hofstra played a zone, a 2-3 zone against Syracuse.
Oh, they're old medicine.
Syracuse played a zone for over 40 years. And Syracuse can't figure out how to beat a 2-3 zone with the shooters that they're supposed to have on this team, with the playmakers they're supposed to have the team, with the lob threat they're supposed to have on this team. Like, it doesn't make sense. And even when Mercyhurst transitioned into a zone, Syracuse looks stunned. Like, JJ and Nate George were just passing the ball, like, back and forth, like, lobbing it over the Mercyhurst players. Like, they didn't know what to do. And that kind of makes it seem like there's some sort of coaching issue if Syracuse can't beat a simple zone. And they're not providing energy. Like, if there's no energy from this team against two of the worst teams, when they could, if they go on the stretch and win all these non-conference games by a lot, like, that'll bump up their record, bump up their standing in the net rankings, and get some more quad 3 and 4 wins before ACC play starts. Like, there was no direction. Like, there was no sense of urgency. I don't know if the team knew what they were playing for.
No, and that is the problem. And I think Adrian Autry, he like solves problems with that Tennessee win. It's like, oh, look at this. He knows how to coach defense. And I forgot to say this at the start. We have a great interview with Cooper Boardman. He's doing some calling games for ESPN college basketball games, specifically ACC games. And we really get into this about Adrian Autry. He showed against Tennessee he could coach defense. And really at the start of the season and in Vegas too, he showed that defensively he knows what he's doing. He knows how to roll out a good defense. And now here's my two. Now, and of course, that's all just been evaporated the last three games because Syracuse has looked awful defensively. But here are my two biggest issues. And the first I'm going to start, it starts with Adrian Autry. And I mean, he had probably the worst, after the Mercyhurst game, the worst post-game press conference I've ever heard. His opening monologue was like, well, how do I say monologue? His opening statement was like 3.5 minutes, and it was nothing. He said nothing. He provided no context to the game. And I don't understand, because on the bench, you saw him. If you watched the game, you saw him. He was pissed. He looked angry the entire 40 minutes. You could tell he was not happy. But then he walks out in front of the media, and it's like this big cover-up. He's like, oh, we're building something. We're working to get where we need to get. We need to clean these things up. And my biggest issue is he said the offense, there's no problem with the offense. And he kind of got upset with one of the reporters. And the reporter asked a completely valid question. You know, he asked, what's the problem with your offense? And he said, there's no problem. How is there no problem with your offense when Mercyhurst beats you in a half? Mercyhurst beat Syracuse in the second half 39 to 37. How is there no problem? And I get maybe your best player, Donnie Freeman, is not in the lineup. Sure, that's a problem. And the team will improve when he gets back. They will. There will be improvements. But you should win no matter what. The reserves should beat Mercyhurst in both halves. How you say there is no problem with this offense is beyond me, because there is. All the offense is right now is a lob to William Kyle. And credit to William Kyle. He's been the best player this season by a long stretch. My guy, William Kyle. No offense to your guy, Griffin. Tyler Betsey, I mean, where's he been? Where's Nate King's been? I mean, they haven't been showing up at all. And it's just they're like literally the offensive plan against Mercyhurst was Adrian Autry's game plan just be like, you're more athletic than they are? Because that's what it was. It was literally just like, yep, yeah, you're probably gonna have more lobs. Sadiq White's gonna be able to do his Giannis-esque three steps and dunk the ball, but that's it. That was so there was no offensive game plan, no sets, no strategy. And I know Nathan George is getting a ton of criticism right now. I'm actually not. I don't think he's had. I don't have a problem with his play. I think he's playing fine. I think he has no direction on what he's supposed to do as a point guard.
I agree with you there. I think Nate George is getting a lot of unfair criticism. I think his play hasn't been great. I think, but that's not his fault. I agree with you. I don't think he's been put in the right position to succeed. Like he, when you look at him, he's trying to set stuff up, and then he is making a lot of bad passes. Yes, I will say
Yeah,
that.
turnovers are,
But
you
like,
can't have 16
he's a
turnovers.
guy. But he's a guy that is supposed to work well with a structured offense. There is no structured offense.
There's
And that's
nothing.
no, and that's been the thing with Adrian Autry throughout his entire 3 years. Is this year three? Yeah.
Yes.
There's been no structured offense. There's been no game plan on that side of the ball. And before this, there wasn't any game plan on the defensive side of the ball. At least now there's a game plan on one side of the ball, but it's not working. There's so much talent on this team, way too much talent for these games to be this close. I'm like, that is what is killing me. You have a point guard, you have a combo guard. JJ Starling has looked pretty good. He's been scoring in bunches the
He
past couple of
has.
games, and
His
that's
first
what
halves
you.
have been great.
And that's the thing. Like, I remember the game Tennessee when Nate Kings had like 19 points in that first half, and then they didn't even give him the ball in the second half. It's the same thing. JJ Starling against Hofstra, good first half. Where was that in the second half? Same thing against Mercyhurst. Like, JJ Starling had 13 points in the first half against Mercyhurst. And you can't finish the game with 15 points. He had 13 points in the first half of both Hofstra and Mercyhurst. Second half of both games, less 2 points. 2 points. That should never happen. JJ Starling should be putting up close to 20 points a night, and he can obviously do it. So, like, what is changing? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No, there's just no offensive identity with this team. And JJ Starling, he brings me the same frustrations that Nathan George is bringing me with the turnovers. There are times where he's too sloppy with the basketball, or he's simply trying to force things. And I think Syracuse, they almost need to like dumb it down a little bit. Like, I know you can't lob it to William Kyle every time, but there's times where it's like they're chucking up a late three, and it's like, why are you doing that when you have William Kyle and you have, excuse me, and you have Sadiq White? Two guys that just get the ball in the paint. Just move it, especially against Mercyhurst. They could have gone inside every time, and Mercyhurst had nobody. No, William Kyle and Sadiq White should have finished with 20 points. And William Kyle had a good game. He had 15. Sadiq White did not have that good of a game. He should have been better. There was no reason why he should not have had 20 points in this game. There was no size for Mercyhurst. Could have gone inside every time and literally just easy layup or dunk. And that simply just didn't happen. And the turnovers are why that didn't happen. Every time they tried to set something up or attempted to, they turned the ball over. There's 16 turnovers is unacceptable. And it's just mind-boggling to me. And in the 3 years for Adrian Autry, the one thing that's been consistent is playing down to competition. And it doesn't matter. I mean, last year we said it, well, it was because the team was on that level of poor competition. This year's roster isn't. This year's roster is miles better. There's no denying that. Talent-wise, number of stars, experience-wise, it is just so much better. And they're still playing down to competition. And that falls on Adrian Autry. That
Yeah,
it's that simple. Like
it
it's
does.
not, it's you can't look at the portal. They hired somebody for that. You know, somebody brought in the players for Syracuse. What is his name? Alex Klein,
Alex
right?
Klein.
Yes, I was drawing a blank on his name. He assembled a great roster. I mean, maybe not a perfect roster, but a pretty damn good roster. I mean, he found William Kyle. Like, you got to give him credit for that. He found a guy that was barely coming off the bench at UCLA who I think is going to make an all ACC team at this clip he's going at. And Adrian Autry can't seem to put the pieces together. And you can't say it's not his team. This is about as Adrian Autry of a team you want. So there is severe pressure now on this team, but on Adrian Autry to deliver in conference play, because let's be honest, the non-conference slate, you had a great win over Tennessee. You should have beat Houston with the free throws, but how was it different than last year's non-conference play? Other than the win against Tennessee, you still played really poor against this competition.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty disappointing to an extent. Like, it's not the season that Syracuse fans thought they were going to have.
No.
At all.
You had a moment with Vegas, kind of. I mean, I'm not going to count Iowa State because that was a weird game. I mean, you kind of weren't in it. I mean, you weren't really in it against Kansas. And then you beat Tennessee.
You beat Tennessee. Like, that's the only thing. Like, this Donnie Freeman injury is just, like,
I was gonna flat. Get
like, it just, it's, it all goes back to this Donnie Freeman injury.
Part, like, yeah, partially.
Like, Syracuse should still be beating these teams by 30. But, like, we don't know if Donnie Freeman's ever going to play for Syracuse again. Like, this is similar to what happened last season. Donnie Freeman went down. People were like, okay, he's day-to-day. He's out for a couple weeks. He's out for 2.5 months. And the season's over. Thank you very much. Like, Syracuse basketball should not need to rely on one person to completely just fall apart. Like, that Hofstra loss is unexcusable. Especially after a Tennessee win that puts you back in March Madness contention.
And then you swing right back out of it. Yeah.
Like, you need miraculous things in ACC play to turn that around.
You do.
You could have.
Go ahead.
What? You could be Houston.
Yeah.
Like totally. This season had so much potential. If you just, like, look at where you could be from right now, and it's like, you're just not going to be there.
Yeah, certainly. And the thing with Donnie Freeman, as a Sixers fan, this is very similar to Joel Embiid. It's like, you don't know what he hurt, when he got hurt, how he got hurt, and you don't know when he's coming back. And last year, I think Syracuse, they covered it up. They hid it from the media. I heard this from Brent Axe, our good friend Brent Axe. He said, this is all coming from Brent Axe. I listened to his podcast. He's got a great podcast. And he said that this is something from Donnie Freeman's camp, entourage, if you want to say, is holding him out. And I totally understand that. All these high-ranking recruits, really every college, big-name college basketball player has an agent, has people within his circle, and I think they're holding him out, and I don't understand why, because he's not NBA ready. He doesn't have enough games to be NBA ready at this moment. He absolutely can be in the NBA, but he needs to freaking play, and he simply hasn't done that in his 2 years of college. And I thought it was interesting in that post-game press conference, someone asked, oh, what did Donnie Freeman hurt? Adrian Autry just said lower body. He has no – I don't think he even knows what's wrong with Freeman, and that is really frustrating, and you're starting to kind of lose your – I don't know, not faith in Donnie Freeman, but almost lose interest in him. It's almost like, does he really care about the team, or is he just kind of focused on making sure he gets to, to that NBA draft or gets that name called at the NBA draft?
But it's not going to happen.
No, not right now. He's got to get on the floor.
Yeah, he has to play, and he has to show something, because right now all he showed is that he's quitting on his team, if that's true. NBA teams don't like quitters. Like, they like guys that are heart intensity. Like, they don't give up. Yeah. And it's beyond me. Like,
yeah, and right now all doors are pointing towards a transfer portal exit at the end of this year. If this continues on with him kind of fluking in and out of the lineup injury wise, I don't want to make assumptions, but it just doesn't look like he's all that dedicated to Syracuse basketball at the moment.
And why should Syracuse basketball be dedicated to him?
They're paying him a lot. Yeah, I mean, they should break him off if that is the case. Again, we're making kind of an assumption, but really not. I think we all know what's going on. It isn't. I don't think it's a severe injury. I think it's just him being overly cautious with things. I don't think he was thrilled with how things went down last year. Maybe I think maybe that surgery could have been done That's another perplexing thing we never got an answer to. Why wasn't the surgery done in like January? Why'd they wait 2 months for him to have the surgery? He did warm up against Mercyhurst, but then he didn't play. So we'll see what happens against Northeastern on Saturday. One more point on this men's basketball team, and I want to get your opinion on it, Griffin. Not your opinion, just your thoughts. I think it's worth noting and worth emphasizing the ACC is about as good as it has been in 3 or 4 years. They have, let me do that, 12 teams in the top 65 of the net. That's really good. That's something that the Atlantic Coast Conference was not seeing the last 2 years. So there are opportunities for Syracuse to get plenty of quad one wins and get plenty of permanent punching ticket wins. There is a stretch at the end of the season from, let me double check here, from February 16th to March 3rd, where it is 5 quad one teams in a row. And that could obviously change. But like, there's opportunity for this to be a great season and get quad one wins. But there's also an opportunity where it is a disaster and you lose 5, 6, 7 straight games.
You're going to have to take advantage. Like, that's the good thing about the ACC this year.
Yeah.
Is they took care of non-conference business. They hung around with the SEC and the ACC-SEC Challenge. That's a good thing. That means these ACC games are meaningless. You can go out and win 15 ACC games and have a shot at the tournament. You could go out and beat UNC at home, beat Louisville, beat SMU, beat NC State. Like, those are going to be big games this season. Like, if Syracuse can take a couple of those, now I'd say, okay, if Donnie Freeman's back, like, you can make this thing.
Certainly.
Take care of business against the bad ACC teams. Beat Boston College, both at home
beat
and away.
Pitt.
Like, beat Pitt. Beat Notre Dame. Like, Notre Dame's a decent team this year, but there's beatable teams in this conference, especially with the talent Syracuse had, especially with the way Syracuse has played better competition. Because except for that second half against Iowa State, Syracuse has played up to better competition. They need to do that. They need to do that. And I don't know, as long as there's no blowups in the next 2 or 3 games,
you would assume Northeastern and Stonehill would be easy wins, but the way this team plays under the competition, you really have no idea. And it's also interesting, after the Tennessee win, Syracuse in the net was 71. They are now 96 in the net. I think that perfectly sums up the month of December, just how it was way up top, and then it really just came spiraling down. And also, KenPom ranks them 116th offensive rating. So, Adrian Autry, you can't say to the media that there's no problem with your offense when you are 116 in the country. Like, that ain't good. That's right under Northern Colorado and East Tennessee State. Like, that, you can't be in that bubble.
That's a good East Tennessee State team.
Well, that's an East Tennessee State team that ranks 118 in offense efficiency. And, 119 in KenPom. Syracuse KenPom is 80 right now, which I think is kind of high maybe, but that's what the math is mathing at the moment. We are recording this Friday morning, and that means Syracuse women's basketball is playing one of my favorite games of the year. I had the privilege of being at it last year. It's the school day game, or the kids' day game, whatever they call it now, and that is against Mercyhurst. Hence, seems to be the team right now. And we're going to do a live Ostrom Avenue podcast update. See, this is how you handle business, Griffin. Syracuse, 10-1 Syracuse women's basketball against 0-10 Mercyhurst are up 58-27 right now. Oh, 60 now. That's what we love. Why, live
up. Just hit a jumper.
There we go. Live updates. That is how you handle business against lesser opponents.
Talk about a really good team.
Yeah,
this team,
here we go.
This team will be in March Madness. I will say it.
There we go.
I will say it. They have one of the best front court players in the country, Uche Azoje. I'll say that. First season of college basketball, and she's just lighting up the court. Like, what she's doing is phenomenal. 12.5 points, 8 rebounds, like 3 blocks a game, like in like 24 minutes. Are you kidding me? And then the backcourt, Dominique Darius, Layla Filia, those are two Big Ten transfers. I was about to say Pac-12, but
I guess UCLA and USC are
Yeah.
now in the are now Big Ten.
Yep.
Filia from Texas. Like, these are good players. Sophie Burrows is finally finding her stride. We
Yep.
talked about that. Like, she's now knocking down threes. That's really good to see. And then this team has depth. Coach Jack's already played every single player today, and we're 3 minutes into the third quarter, which is pretty Coach Jack-esque. Like, this is a team that is gonna know how to use their bench, know how to use their front court. As OJ has 18 points and 5 rebounds already today. Like, that's pretty ridiculous. In 13 minutes, like she's a really good player. This is a good team. This is a good team, and they've been killing teams. Outside of their last game, which was a little close, they've been playing really well.
They certainly have. And with that good play, and me and Cooper Borbin get into this, and just really the turnaround of Syracuse women's basketball. And we've talked about this a lot. It all predicates around head coach Felicia Legette-Jack and what she's done with this program. And this is probably maybe the most impressive thing. The one of the top ranked recruits, or the number one overall prospect, I should say, in the class of 2027, they have got an official visit with Syracuse, Kalina Smith. She's got Louisville, Cal, and Syracuse. That's an interesting, three teams there. But the fact that Syracuse is on that list, I mean, that is really impressive, and that's a good feat for Felicia Legette-Jack. And if it comes to it, like if she ends up coming to Syracuse, I mean, that would be insane, and that would really, really put, not that this team isn't on the map, but it would really put this team on the map.
It's pretty ridiculous, to be honest. Like, the fact that Syracuse gets a recruit of that level to even come to the dome, come to Syracuse and take a visit, like, that is pretty crazy. As we're about to get, it's, you mentioned it is school day, and I don't want to off track too much, but the Syracuse has almost reached 67 points. The dome's about to erupt with all the kids. All right, sorry.
No.
Had to check in with the dome there.
Yeah.
But no, this is crazy. Like, I can't, the ooh, words. The last recruit of this level I can imagine to like be interested in Syracuse, maybe like Breonna Stewart. Obviously the fact that Syracuse didn't land her is kind of crazy. Oh, Syracuse misses another three to not reach 67. It is a whole nother topic for another day. The fact that she was playing at CNS and then went to UConn of all places, and now is
Well,
WNBA legend, UConn legend. But like, this would be crazy. She's from California, UCLA and USC must be interested. Like,
yeah, you
what
want the
is going
whole
on?
list. There's more than just Louisville and Cal. We got UConn, we got USC, we got UCLA, we got Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Michigan State, Michigan, LSU, Iowa. So there is a laundry list of teams that obviously are interested in the number one prospect in the class of 2027, but the fact that Syracuse is also appearing on that list is really impressive.
I mean, this is like some like Fran Brown level like
It
recruit
is.
it.
It
The
is.
fans go crazy. Syracuse gets 68 points.
Ah.
Not as crazy, but anyways, like Syracuse being named in like the big schools is kind of like what we've been seeing from football the past couple of years. And so like that is really good to see. Coach Jack, I'm really curious to hear like how she. Why Syracuse, to be all honest? I mean, she's getting recruited by South Carolina, Tennessee, all these Gino Auriemma out in Storrs, Connecticut. Like, these are all powerhouse blue bloods of college basketball. Like, what's the connection to Syracuse? I'm interested to learn more about that.
Certainly, again, I think it has to do a lot with the fact that Felicia Legette-Jack has a big pull, and the way she talks to the media, I've always said this, makes me want to run through a wall. I could only imagine
Did
the
they win the
way
CIA
that
championship?
she speaks to recruits and how that can be motivating for others as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Syracuse women's basketball well on their way to beating Mercyhurst inside the dome on a school day, which is always really cool. I wish the men's basketball did that. They could use that kind of atmosphere. The atmospheres of the dome have been awful, and they probably will be for the next two games as well. Going over to football, you thought we were done talking about football. We're not, because the transfer portal, it opens right after New Year's, and there's going to be a lot of activity for Fran Brown and Syracuse football because they really got to reshape what was a disastrous season. They've already done a lot of reshaping with the coaching staff, plenty of new coordinators out there, and there's a quarterback to watch, but let's start with the outgoing quarterback first. Luke Kearney, kind of surprised he left. He's announcing he's going to be transferring. And the reason I think he's doing this is because, again, it's worth noting there is no second portal after the spring. That, remember, that is the portal that landed Steve Angeli here, the second portal. Because, he
Yeah.
competed in the Notre Dame spring camp, and Notre Dame Marcus Freeman was like, hey, you're not going to be the starter. He enters the portal. I'm assuming Luke Kearney is saying, well, I'm probably not, I'm going to be a backup again, so I'm going to enter the portal to look to, for a starting spot. I don't think he's earned a starting spot, Luke Kearney, from what he showed. It'll be interesting to see where he goes and interesting to see to follow his career because I thought Luke Kearney wasn't bad. I thought he was better than Ricky Collins. But, I would have rather had Luke Kearney stick around than Ricky Collins.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy that Ricky Collins hasn't entered the transfer
I
portal.
guess he's
But
sticking
yeah,
around.
maybe. I mean, there's still plenty of time. Portal opens January 2nd. It is December 19th. Who knows? Maybe if Steve Angeli stayed around in South Bend and he earned the starting spot, they might be in the playoffs instead of looking out and not playing a bowl game. But that's a topic for another day. It should be interesting. I think Luke Kearney, I saw him around campus probably like about a week ago. He didn't seem to be all too joyful. But who knows? Like, you never really know what's going on with him. I mean, if Carlos Del Rio Wilson was starting games at the end of the year with Marshall, like, I think anyone can be a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. So that will be interesting. As for Luke Kearney, I think Syracuse and Fran Brown specifically just handled him the complete wrong way. Like, they didn't give him the right opportunity. They put him into games they shouldn't have. They didn't let him play a game they shouldn't. Like, Luke Kearney should have played the whole BC game. Like, he should have played the whole game. But Syracuse put him in for a couple drives in previous games, and then they wasted his eligibility. So, like,
Well,
that.
this is the thing. Fran Brown wanted to keep Luke Kearney because that's why they didn't play him so much at the end of the season. They wanted to save that eligibility to redshirt him, and then he enters the portal. And that's the harsh reality of college athletics with the transfer portal. So Luke Kearney's gone. Ricky Collins is still here. And Fran Brown did say at the end of the season he wanted to bring in two quarterbacks, which I thought was a lot. I mean, you needed to bring in a better backup because obviously all the quarterbacks you had were miserable backup quarterbacks. That is, but it's hard to in the portal to get a backup quarterback because everyone in the portal wants to be a starting quarterback. But there is a name out there that I think is really interesting. Before I get to that, one more outgoing quarterback. It's our guy. If you've listened to the Ostrom Avenue podcast for a long time, someone who we really wanted to see take the field and never did, Ja'Cory Williams. I mean, I hope he has a brilliant career the rest of the way, wherever he goes. I hope he. Ends up at Alabama in 2 years and is winning a national championship.
Yeah, wow, that's my guy,
It is. I
Ja'Cory Williams.
mean,
I saw that news and I shed a tear. Like I was like, oh, what could have been? If
his
only he didn't
spring
get
game
injured.
performance was legendary. He was
Yeah.
excellent in the spring.
If only he didn't get injured, he would have started that BC game. Joe Flaherty's career would have been saved, and Ja'Cory Williams would have led Syracuse to a bowl game. Like it was right there on the cards. Good luck to Ja'Cory wherever he goes.
Yes.
Our days of talking about you on the Ocean Pod will surely be missed.
Yes.
But I'm gonna say it. All these other transfers, I'm not worried. Syracuse hasn't lost anybody that really concerns me. And
No.
I don't think that's too crazy to say.
Yeah.
The biggest name I would say, Derek McDonald, but like he wasn't even seeing the field. Like that's a locker room guy, it's a leadership guy. But I mean, these other names. Manuel Ross was a good recruit, but like he hasn't been
Name
productive.
panned
Caleb
out.
Singleton was like a quarterback that really didn't get any play. Like Syracuse is, they haven't lost any big names, haven't lost any big starters. I'm not too worried.
No, and here's what I've been wanting to get to. I've been teasing it. The quarterback that Syracuse football is reportedly interested in is Marcus Stokes. Probably never heard of him. He plays at a D2 college. He plays at West Florida, D2, and he lit up the D2 circuit. He is a nominee for the Harlan Hill Trophy, which is essentially the Division II Heisman. So you're looking at a D2 Heisman quarterback here. Numbers are pretty good. I mean, he's a gunslinger. That's what it seems like. He did throw 13 interceptions, which isn't a good sign for Syracuse quarterback and throwing interceptions. But 30 TDs, tons of passing yards. Completion percentage wasn't awful. I mean, it's weird because it's in a different level. But, I mean, we saw this. Ole Miss's quarterback, that he was a D2 guy. And now he's, you know, he was leading the Rebels to what looked like a really good stretch. Obviously, they lost their head coach. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing what a D2 guy looks like. Again, as a backup, it's hard to get backup quarterbacks to come to a college football program. You know, it's hard to say, come to my program and be a backup.
No.
When there's a million places you could probably start.
And you mentioned the Ole Miss quarterback. He was supposed to start this season.
Yeah.
Came in, did a great job, led his team to a college football playoff spot. Like, mm-hmm. that is really cool. It's going to be hard to, you mentioned, hard to get anyone to become a backup quarterback to Syracuse of all places. But, you know, Frey Brown could do miraculous things as we've seen. And, you know, they got to get somebody. They got to get – I was a little unsure of, like, two people – But, like, for Syracuse and Fran Brown, they need two other quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, what they had was just not good. And, I mean, we don't need to talk about it. It was just look at any box score after the Clemson game, and you can clearly see how poor it was. Again, portal opens January 2nd. It'll be really interesting to see who comes in. You know, Florida's quarterback, he's in the transfer portal. You know, would that be something, Griffin?
Yeah, DJ Lagway, hey, you want to come rival Steve Angeli for a job? Yeah, it's not going to happen, DJ.
I mean, look at, you know, there is something to be said.
DJ Lagway's going to like Miami.
I didn't know that. Look at Kyle McCord. Kyle McCord showed, Fran Brown set a standard.
Kyle McCord didn't have a quarterback battle.
No, but it shows, hey, you can transfer to Syracuse and have a really good season.
That's what Steve Angeli did.
I know.
Rockets,
I know. I know. He'll probably have a spot where he's a guaranteed starter. But I think it's just fun to think about. It's fun to think about good things for Syracuse football because there was a lot of bad things that transpired. Last thing before we get to our fantastic interview with Cooper Boardman, we get into a lot of great stuff. We talk about the Oster Avenue podcast origins, which is always fun, and just his time at WAR. He didn't leave Syracuse that long ago, 2021. So recent conversations, especially about the maybe downhill spiral of Syracuse men's basketball, end of the Jim Boeheim era. Cooper has a lot of really good thoughts on that. But before we get to that, Gary Gate dropped the schedule. And holy smokes, Griffin, when it came out, I thought it was fake. I'm not kidding. I thought this was a fake schedule. I was like, oh, is this like a hypothetical schedule? No, this is a real deal schedule. Six consecutive road games from February 21st all the way until March 16th. I mean, every team is loaded on this slate. You start with Boston University, which is no throwover, and then even St. Joseph's. They're always in the playoff mix, in the tournament mix, in RPI. Like, this is a loaded slate.
Yeah. And then, all right, two not so easy warm-up games, and then you just host Maryland,
yeah,
who you've always had struggles with. You lost to last year. Like, hey Maryland, come to the dome and get some revenge. I think that's a doubleheader with the women's lacrosse. Supposedly their schedule hasn't come out officially, but I think North Carolina is slated to come to the dome for a doubleheader with Maryland. So that should be really, really, really fun day for Syracuse lacrosse, one that we'll have bookmarked. February 13th, a Friday doubleheader, also pretty cool. And then, like, you mentioned that six game stretch, Harvard, no like
lost
no
to
easy
last
game,
year.
Princeton, no easy game,
Rolling Tournament game, no easy game,
Hopkins, you never know how good Hopkins is gonna be, but like away at Hopkins, it's not easy, and then Air Force and
Denver. Like, that's altitude, that's far away, that's two games in California or Colorado. Let's get our states right. And then you come home and take on Georgetown, Duke, UNC, Virginia, Colgate. Like, those are not easy teams. Like, this is a hard schedule. And in a year where it is literally not last year Final Four bust, this year it's national championship or bust. Those are the expectations with this group. And anything short of national championship win is a failure.
Certainly, and he's basically looking at the senior group. It's like, we're going out with a bang. We're going out with the hardest schedule in the country. It's going to be really fun. And the reason Gary Gate did this is because RPI measures strength of schedule. And if you have losses to these types of really good teams, it's better than slipping up against a bad team. And I think that is basically what Gary Gate said. He'd rather drop games against really good teams. And if it came down to, oh, do I like this team or that team? Well, this team played the hardest schedule in the country. And if you go on a crazy run, you have the best schedule in the country to back you up.
Joey Spallina tore it on watch. He's gonna win it, hopefully. We also got some women's basketball news.
Oh yeah.
10,226 people at the Dome for school day record, the second highest attendance ever for an SU women's basketball game. It's pretty
That.
cool stuff.
That's again, that's the Felicia Leggett Jack Poole. Obviously, I know it was school day as well, but that's cool. That's cool. That's a fun team right now. Men's basketball, maybe not so much. Men's lacrosse, that looks really fun. What also is fun is catching up with Cooper Boardman. He was at WAER for his 4 years when he was on the Hill. Tons of great stuff that we talked about. We really dived into Syracuse men's basketball and how things were looking on the up and up, and then things, it's kind of been a weird up and down, few years for the program. So we get into all that. Plus, we touch on his best moments when he was at Syracuse. So, without further ado, me and Cooper right now on the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
Super excited to have Cooper Boardman on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Cooper graduated from Syracuse, most importantly, graduated from WAR in 2021. Has gone on to do fantastic things. And Cooper, now you're getting a really super cool experience of calling some college basketball games on ESPN. Of course, this isn't the first time you're jumping into college basketball, but how's it been so far, working with ACC Network and ESPN?
It's been awesome. It's been fun. It was fun to be back in the dome. I guess that was a couple of weeks ago, and I gotta say, I have to shout out my college roommate Owen Valentine, who
Do it, do it.
him and Brennan Mortensen were the inventors of this podcast. And I think I've listened to like 100,000 episodes of this podcast, either on my phone or like through our bedroom walls on Ackerman Avenue. So to be here is a great honor, and I appreciate it, AJ.
No, yeah, we love that. All the mentions with the Ocean Avenue podcast we can get, the better for certainly. And I think it's I want to start the conversation here because I think it's interesting. When you were calling the games for WAR and Syracuse men's basketball, people didn't know it, but it was the end. It was the final chapters of the Jim Boeheim era. Now they're starting a whole new book basically with Adrian Autry, and it's featured some ups and downs so far. When you left calling Syracuse basketball games, did you see maybe not the downfall they went on, but the kind of real turbulent years that were to follow?
Yeah, it is interesting because I think, boy, so I'm class of 2021. So my last experience being around Syracuse basketball every single day is the 2021 tournament run, and that's like out of COVID. We didn't even know there was going to be a season. And I thought that that season, first of all, was unreal to be a part of. Like, we're in like the COVID bubble tournament deal, like, hotels in Indianapolis. We had to stay there for like 3 weeks. It was awesome. But it encapsulated what that era was like, which is, are we gonna get into the tournament up until the moment that our names are uttered on Selection Sunday? And more often than not, Jim Boeheim found a way. And then it was, we're gonna get to the tournament, we're gonna play a 2-3 zone, and you're probably not going to be able to figure it out. And they beat the you know what out of San Diego State. They beat West Virginia doing it in that tournament, and then lost to a Houston team that, flip a coin, they could have won the national championship that year. But anyway, that was what Syracuse basketball was for, I'd probably say a 6, 7, 8 year stretch, in the ACC. And then obviously that, as you just put it, was the tail end of what Syracuse was at the time. And it has been really fascinating to watch it from afar and now be a part of it kind of from afar and drop in. And I think when you're living it every day, it feels like a really big change. And I'm not saying there haven't been really big changes. Anytime, you have a somebody like Jim Boeheim move on, it's going to be seismic in some way. And I think you see that with not only in Syracuse, but in all these programs around the country, that have had figureheads leave, not just head coaches leave. But I do also think that there's a lot that stayed the same. And like Everett Autry on the bench is not necessarily different. I do think that this is probably the first year that I look at this team and this program and feel like it is truly his. And I think talking to people around the ACC and talking to people that know him better than I do, they feel that way too. And I know that that goes a lot of different ways. I'm sure you have listeners who hate that and love that and all that. But I do think that for the program to get kind of change into what it's going to be, you had to, eventually have a program that felt and tasted fully like his. And here we are. There's a lot of season left to go to find out what that's going to look like.
Do you think the people within the ACC are saying it's his program because he finally got his fingerprints on the transfer portal? He finally brought in his so-called recruiting class in a way, or is it more of a X's and O's thing that they're saying that he's finally established?
I think it's a little bit of both. I do think that in the era of transfer portal, in that world that we live in, it is part of that. And it always felt like, at least to me, and again, I'm a little bit more outside looking in, like you're someone who's in it, every single day, but it did feel like there was one foot in the Boeheim era. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I mean, Jim Boeheim's a legend for great reason, but it was one foot in that era and one foot in this one. And so I do think that the roster construction piece of it, and obviously, we're playing 2-3 zone 100, 99% of the time. That's part of it too. But that's been different, for years now. But I do think that when you look at this roster, it feels like his. And I think the way that they've played defensively on average, relative by really any defensive metric you look at on a national scale, shows that that's his baby. Like he's done that. And I'm excited to see what the next few weeks look like. I know it's a weird moment for us to be talking about them, and I'm sure you're living it. People aren't happy, but I'll be very interested to see what the next 3, 4 weeks look like for this team.
I mean, it's been an interesting 2 weeks. You have a thrilling win over Tennessee,
Why?
and then you drop the ball against what is a good Hofstra team. You know all about those sneaky sneaky small schools that can really trick you, and it certainly did that for Syracuse. And flipping it back to the ACC, because really that's now where the attention is for Adrian Autry. And you get the Tennessee win, but now you do need to get some serious wins in the ACC. The problem, though, and I wonder how much of this was the problem when you were there at Syracuse, the big win, the quality wins in the ACC are harder to come by. I think the ACC is still a strong conference. I think it gets unnecessarily shot down at times. I know it's not a powerhouse to what the Big Ten or the SEC is doing basketball wise or the Big 12, but I feel like there's still plenty of strong teams in the conference.
Well, we're having a much different conversation on December 15th of 2025 than we were on December 15th of 2024. And I don't need to tell you that. You can look at the way the league played in the non-conference last year. They were, just the numbers. Win-loss was horrific. They got crushed in the ACC-SEC challenge. I'm not saying anything Syracuse fans don't know. I think the good thing is, losing to Hofstra really hurts a resume. And a resume doesn't matter on December 15th. You've got to win a lot of games in the conference, no matter what, to be an NCAA tournament team. But I do think that the ACC can get 8, 9, 10 teams in the tournament. I'm not saying they're going to when the dust settles, but they have not. On December 15th of last year, they had played themselves collectively out of that conversation completely. We're not in that world, anymore. And, Duke Carolina, and Louisville are, clearly the class of the league as it stands right now, based on what they've done. I think NC State is a really good team. I know they haven't beaten a good team yet, but they played well against, good teams, at least offensively. Virginia is, one of the stories of the college basketball season. I think as we speak, they're in the top 25
as of this afternoon, and they probably should have been there already. Their style, the way they play offensively, the way they pass the ball, is fun. Miami is incredibly talented. And that's before we, talk about Clemson, the number of wins that SMU has. I mean, we could go on and on and on down the list. I haven't even mentioned Syracuse yet because they're not one of those teams that's in the tournament. If we started it tomorrow, doesn't matter. But the point being, generally, is in an 18-game ACC schedule, which is what they're playing this year, which is the change, I think, for the first time in like 4 or 5 years. In an 18-game schedule, if you win 13-14, a lot to ask, but win 13-14, I think you're in a much, much better place than you were last year, which was if you won 12 or 13, you still had no shot, out of that percentage of the schedule at least.
And something else that has drastically shifted since Jim Boeheim era and that 2021 season we were talking about is college landscape entirely with NIL. We just saw Syracuse play a Thanksgiving tournament solely based off of NIL money and revenue that they would get in. They may
Yeah, I
not
heard
tell you
about
that,
that.
but yeah, that was a mess. Didn't work out for the team. They should have beat Houston. But again, the reason they were there was certainly for the money. But in terms of the recruiting and how Syracuse is getting players, I think you were when you were here in Syracuse, there was still that we're going to get the guy nobody hears about, shape him into, mold him into the Michael Carter Williams, really grit and tough kind of guy. I think now we're seeing a big shift. I think it's because they have to do this, where it's let's go get at the Sadiq White, let's go get the Donnie Freeman, the four, the five star. Do you think Syracuse could still go into its roots and develop those, less prominent names?
Well, I think you have to do both. I mean, and that's the reality. Look, the talent pool is bigger than it's ever been before. You look at good teams around the country, and to be fair, if you're a Michigan or a Duke, you're maybe in a little bit of a different scenario. But if you look at teams, I don't know, 5 through 25 in KenPom, right? That are great teams that are, a lot of them are capable of going to a Final Four and contending for a national championship. They're built with, maybe one big time recruit, a lot of transfers, guys who can shoot it with length. A lot of teams, especially in the ACC, are delving into the European route. I think that that is something that I mean, I love Marek Dolezal. That's a long time ago. But those are the kinds of things that when you talk about roster construction, there are more places that you can pull to get good players than there ever have been before. And when you look at this now, the way that the finances have changed even in the last year to year and a half, you're talking about what becomes a much more level playing field. And I think when you look around the ACC, the difference, not only in terms of wins and losses between this year and last year, is it's a little bit more of a level playing field. There's the they are making a decision, not every team, but teams are making decisions to allocate funding to basketball versus, football, and other sports. And so because of that, the rosters are better. And you look at a Virginia and you look at Wake Forest and you look at SMU and Clemson and kind of this the jumps that some of these teams have taken between last year and this year. And I would put Syracuse in this basket. When you have more money to pay people, you're going to get better players. And now it's about going out there and winning more games. And we'll see what happens. But from the Syracuse perspective of it, I do think that Red Autry has shown that he can recruit. I mean, you look at in terms of four and five stars and all this transfers, he has good players on this roster. And it's not that it's a perfect roster. I don't think there are many teams in the ACC with perfect rosters. But, now it's about, okay, what happens on the court from here? And we'll see what happens.
I think that's kind of the thing that's holding people back from really, liking Adrian Autry is that he hasn't really delivered it X's and O's wise on the floor yet. And of course, we were talking about the double overtime and WAR Sports Talk before we started recording. You'll get those callers that, don't like Adrian Autry. They're saying it's time to move on. I think this is a crazy question, but I think it's worth the conversation. You got to give him 6, 8 years before you get into those realms. I know the tournament drought is what really is bugging everybody. The class that just graduated was like the first class in many, many years not to see tournament basketball. But especially in college athletics, no matter what sport it is, time has to be your friend, in a way to develop.
Well, I think there's something to be said for stability in any program, and I think you see this in any sport. If you fire somebody, just fire somebody. And again, the people that call in, I've taken those calls plenty. There's an entirely reasonable passion when it comes down to it. I also think too is that X's and O's thing that people say, and I understand. Like I watch some of you watch the players' era games and stuff like that. And you're trying to like. You want to see cohesive offense and you want to see movement and you want to see these things. And even down the stretch against Hofstra the other day, watching that, I get it, but you can coach defense. I mean, the way that they play defensively, it's not an accident. Like you didn't just stumble into that. And so, I think the identity of this program is one that, I'm not sure there's a full answer to what it is yet under Adrian Autry. And I think that's okay. Again, we'll see what happens. The years, I'm no athletic director. I'm not going to pretend to be or anything like that. But the roster last year wasn't good enough. I mean, at the end of the day, right? We can have as many conversations as we want. Now the roster, in theory, is good enough. They haven't been healthy enough, maybe, to prove it. Maybe again, I don't need to tell Syracuse fans if you're healthy. Donnie Freeman's a part of these games over these last few weeks, month really. Is it different? Does it matter? No. But I'm just so fascinated to see kind of what the next month looks like because I think it does inform a lot about the 6, 7, 8 years that you're talking about too.
Yeah, certainly does, and that's going to be the money making zone here once that ACC play starts. I want to flip gears to Syracuse women's basketball because, like you said, you got the chance to call their big time win in the ACC SEC Challenge against Auburn. That was an exciting game, and for me at least, I think I've been really super blessed and privileged to see the start of the Felicia Leggett Jack era and just how fascinating of a coach that she is. And I've had the pleasure of talking with her a few times, and great person to have a conversation with. Syracuse women's basketball, when you left, wasn't in a perfect spot, but I think from your first experience, I don't know if that was your first experience, but for the first experience game you called in a while, I gotta say you probably were blown away.
They played awesome. I mean, obviously, I end up doing the game that's been their best win of the season. But they've won a lot of games. I mean, that's a the Michigan game. Michigan's Michigan, but
Very good
I
team.
also think that talking with people around the program, that's a game that like they were never in it at that point, but that's a game that's a learning experience, and it's the kind of game that if it came around again, they'll get a chance in the ACC a couple of times to play teams like that. To me, with Philia and the way that she's played and the experience she's had with Darius, the way that she's played and the experience, like they are the kinds of players that can play in big time games like that and get results in a big time game like that. I would just imagine, just again, I was around the program for like 48 hours, but I would imagine the next time one of those big time games comes around, we're having a much different conversation. And then I haven't even, Uche Izoje is unreal. I mean, you're talking about in this league, the kind of five that can change games consistently. They have a deep bench, plays everybody. They're gonna have to shoot it better. I mean, I'm not sure they're going to. We'll see. But and this goes back to the men's conversation, right? That we were just having, where I do think, especially in the year 2025, if you don't shoot the three well, and you don't have an efficient offense, regardless of what you do defensively, it's gonna be really hard to win. And I did Louisville earlier this year, and they're taking the highest percentage of threes in the country, of anybody on the men's side, with Pat Kelsey and what they're doing. And there are nights where it doesn't matter who you are, you cannot beat them. They will just make more threes than you can keep up with. And that's why they can win the national championship. It's also why they can lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament to a group of five team. And that's that. But I do think that going back to the Syracuse side of things on the women's side is they're going to have to shoot it a little bit better to hang with the teams on the nights where even when they're playing good defense, the three's going in on the other end.
Certainly, and I feel Sophie Burrows, it could be the key to unlocking success long term, maybe tournament success for this team. Before we jump to more of your time here on the Hill, just I got to talk men's lacrosse because you call a great game men's lacrosse game on Westwood One. We love listening to you on the radio come Final Four time. It's got to be the year for Gary Gate, right? I mean, this Spallina's a senior. It's got to happen for him, right?
Boy, I did Champ Weekend last year, and you sit down with him and the players around this program, and look, I thought that semifinal was unfortunate. Maryland, John Tillman in May is John Tillman in May. I hoped that they were going to play better than they did, and I thought that similar to the Syracuse Michigan women's conversation, it's just like they were just never quite in the game, and then they never did, but then you sit there and you watch them against Princeton the week before, and you're like, this is a team that can go win a national championship. There's no reason why Syracuse in 2026, geez, can't go win a national championship. There's zero reason based on what they seem to be bringing in. I don't know a ton on December 15th, but what they seem to be bringing in, what obviously what you said, what they're bringing back, particularly offensively in that group. And it's to me also, you think about it when you talk to enough coaches, you talk about learning how to win, and they kind of had to learn how to get back in the tournament. They had to learn how to get deep into a tournament. Last year's hump, and look, I know the Syracuse lacrosse fan better than anybody, having been one, is, championships are the standard. But when you haven't been to championship weekend the way that they hadn't been to championship weekend, that was, to me, and just again, talking to people around the program, being around it for a weekend, such a watershed emotional moment in so many ways. And for Gary Gate to be the one to do it, it's an amazing thing. And yeah, you're right. There's no reason why they can't win a national championship.
It's I mean, one thing I love about lacrosse, it's still a true college sport to me because you got that senior class. They've been on a ride, really since freshman year together, and there's been a lot of hype. There will be pressure, there's no doubt it about it for Gary Gates group come this year, but it should be an exciting season, no doubt about it. Swing it back to your time on the Hill. I know you got to call a ton of games, super great experiences. Let's stick to the home. What was your favorite dome memory? And it can be I don't know how many 9 p.m. games you had, but we were having quite a few. And a midnight walk out of the dome in December or January is not pleasant. So it can be a snowy walk back to the station.
Yeah, character building walks back to
Yes.
the station.
Equipment and all.
Shoot, man, the best. I think there are a couple things that come to mind. I think 2020, the lacrosse season leading into COVID, so the one that was stopped short, they were the number one team in the country and they went 5-0. And every time I tell that story, I always joke that like in 20 years, I'll pretend they were 15-0 and the number one team in the country. But they, that season was really special. Like when you're a junior, that's kind of your lacrosse season, to be a part of. And that team was really fun. Like it was just cool to be a part of. They beat Army in a comeback in the dome. I think maybe 2 weeks before the world shut down, 9-8, came back, won it, thousands of people obviously in the dome. That's a kind of game that I'll never forget. And I do think that that was, you talk about, I mean, shoot, we're doing a podcast episode on December 15th, the middle of basketball season, in the middle of all the transfer portal football stuff, and you're asking about lacrosse. And it does speak to how special of a lacrosse place that is. And that was, I remember that, and I'm sure everybody's had this experience. Like, I remember that being the day where I finally understood, as someone who wasn't from Central New York. I knew it was a big deal. I knew that they were ranked. I knew it was, but like to be in it and look around on that particular, it must have been a Saturday afternoon, and say, oh, this really, really matters here. I don't know if it's my favorite game, but it was, it shoots first one that came to mind, so it probably tells you something.
Yeah, certainly. And I couldn't agree more. You know, I came in not knowing a whole lot about lacrosse, and I've really fallen in love with the sport, partially because of the fan base that does live here in central New York and in Syracuse. And then last one for you. Is there a game or a moment where you're like, oh, I wish the Cuse had back. I wish they could have gotten this result or that result, and they just couldn't get it done.
Whew, that's a good one.
I know this swings back into the archives for you.
I love it. Yeah, my senior year, 2020 Clemson, first game they played in front of fans that year. It was a kind of a brutal season in the end. But
Yeah.
they were within set, they led Clemson in the first half, I think. They were within 7 in the third quarter in front of like 18,000, which felt like 200,000 at that period of time. And they just couldn't, they couldn't do it. Like I Garrett Schrader got sacked. It was like a strip sack fumble, and Andrew Booth picked it up and scored a touchdown. That would be the one. It actually didn't matter at all. Like they were never going to go to a bowl, but we thought that that was going to be the one. And then, you know, maybe I would like axe COVID for like at least a couple more months, see if that 2020 lacrosse team would have won the national championship.
Certainly. It's funny. Mine is could also be a Clemson Syracuse football moment as well. There's
Yeah.
been a few of
Well,
those.
you know, you do enough Clemson Syracuse football games, I promise you, they're all going to be close.
Yes, exactly. And it's kind of seems how it works out. But no, something always bad happens. It can never be a, even if you win, something always bad turns out. Cooper, thanks so much for taking the time. This is a busy part of your schedule. We really appreciate you coming back onto the WAR airways for a moment.
AJ, I said it was a great honor from the beginning. I really do mean it, and I'd love to do it again anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Big thank you to Cooper Boardman for catching up here on the Ocean Revenue podcast. We love bringing in alums. Those are some of the best conversations. And, you know, I think he said a lot of really good things about Syracuse men's basketball and how this program, it is kind of right there, but they still need to figure out a few things. And that starts Saturday against Northeastern. That is a 4 p.m. tip-off Saturday. We recorded this Friday morning. McClurg Remodeling countdown to tip-off is at 3:30, double overtime all the way until 8 p.m. It should be a breeze. Northeastern is, this is a quad four opportunity for Syracuse men's basketball. Northeastern is way down there in the net rankings. They're not good. They are 204. After that, they have Stonehill, which are 340. Should be two easy wins. We'll be back to recap those games next week and to get you ready for ACC play that starts with Clemson on New Year's Eve. That should be a fun one against the Tigers. But be sure to listen to previous episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast wherever you get your podcast or at WAER.org. For me and Griffin, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for listening.